Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Poppy Day. Why is it so important to take time to remember the millions of young men who put down their lives in the name of freedom, and to reflect on the cost of modern conflict, as so many more are currently serving in wars around the world? And Father Jim Brand reflects on how love doesn't cease with death. I was walking down the corridor here in Vatican Radio with my friend and colleague Veronica Scaresbrick. Veronica was wearing a poppy pinned to her coat, as Remembrance Day was just around the corner. And so many people, Italians mainly, stopped her to ask what the poppy meant. I realised that, although for many the poppy is an eloquent symbol of the day in which we commemorate those who fought and think of those who are still fighting for their country, not everyone recognises its meaning. Actually, Remembrance Day is something I would personally like to know a lot more about myself. So I decided to call up the Royal British Legion. They're the very people who produce the poppies and provide financial, social and emotional support to millions who have served and are currently serving in the armed forces.
My name's Stuart Gendall. I'm the Director of Corporate Communications for the Royal British Legion, and we're 85 years old this year. The Royal British Legion is a charity that raises money and supports ex-service people and their families, those people that have been injured in their service to their country or the families that have been affected by the loss of loved ones. And we're also involved in making sure that our nation remembers, through the two-minute silence, the sacrifice of those who lost their lives in wars as long ago as the First World War and right up to today.
The two-minute silence Stuart is speaking about is always held on the 11th of November at 11 o'clock. This is the day that World War I ended in 1918, when the armistice was signed in Compiègne in France at 5 a.m. 6 hours later, more or less at 11 o'clock, the fighting stopped.
Well, the first official Poppy Day was on the 11th of November in 1921. And poppies were really chosen as the symbol. They were inspired by a poem called In Flanders Fields, which was written by John McCrae, who was a doctor serving with the Canadian Armed Forces. And he'd been deeply moved by what he saw and wrote this poem. And later on, it was taken up as a symbol of remembrance. Obviously, it was the blood red of the flower against the countryside there. Today, the poppy means two things. It's the symbol by which the Royal British Legion raises money through its annual poppy appeal to help with its welfare work, and it's an internationally recognised symbol of remembrance, and it's a remembrance, as I said, about conflict and the human sacrifice of war.
I was reading that your motto is "Remember the dead, don't forget the living." Is that correct?
That's absolutely right, and that reflects the two sides of our organisation. It's very much here and now, but also, reflecting upon, that sacrifice of the past.
I want to speak to you about how you help those who've been affected by war today. But first of all, why is it important to remember?
Well, we think it's very important to remember. I mean, there is a quote that those that don't remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And we think that it's a very important, especially at 11 o'clock on the 11th of November, which is the day that the guns fell silent at the end of the First World War. It's a very traditional day. And we actually use that time to encourage people to pause in their very busy lives and just reflect upon the sacrifice that's been made for the freedoms that we enjoy today. So we think it's very important, and we're very encouraged. We obviously each year try and get our message to as many people as possible. And we conducted a survey this year, and we found that 85% of those that we talked to think it's still relevant. More importantly, over 80% of 18 to 29-year-olds thought it was relevant to them.
Those are the people who obviously weren't here during the First and the Second World Wars.
Yes.
But maybe they're very affected by the wars that are ongoing today.
Well, I think that's a very true point. I think, obviously, we're all bombarded by images of current conflict, and people know the cost of that fighting. I must emphasise that the Royal British Legion is not in any way on the side of encouraging warfare or glorifying warfare. In fact, you know, you'd never find a greater group of people who are against war than many veterans that I talk to. But it's really making people think about the cost of conflict and that loss that's there, not only for families but for whole communities.
Stuart, I was reading that currently nearly 10.5 million people are eligible for your support today, and that you receive thousands of calls for help every year.
That's right.
Who are these people and how do you help them?
Well, these people are the people in the ex-service community, so that's veterans, and veterans can be as young as 17, and certainly at that age, or a little bit older, they could be married and have children, right up to, obviously, the oldest veterans of past conflicts, and their families and their dependents. So it's a total community of 10.5 million. And amongst those, you know, there are people there that either have needs in terms of financial or emotional support. In terms of financial support, the Legion can provide them with grants, or we can help them with their debts and things like that. Or we can pay visits to them in hospital, pay visits to them at home. Many veterans live on their own, and they live on very poor incomes, and they tend to not to ask for help. They tend to be that generation that doesn't ask for help. We have a welfare service called Poppy Support, and that's, as I was saying earlier, is the other side of the poppy. And we raise and spend £75 million each year on providing services like the Poppy Homes, Poppy Breaks, and grants. We also help very young people in getting help with their new career. We provide resettlement advice and training.
So although the needs of ex-service people have changed over the years, Stuart told me the Royal British Legion is still there to safeguard their welfare, their interests and their memory. And memory, Stuart reiterated, is fragile and precious, something that must never be lost.
Well, I think with so many people, British troops currently serving, it's clear that young people are aware of the cost of modern conflict and understand the importance of taking time to reflect upon it. So far from being erased from our memories as history goes on, remembrance is as relevant as ever, and we would encourage everybody to take a bit of time out of their busy schedule on the 11th of November at 11 o'clock and just pause and reflect.
And also maybe buy a poppy.
It'd be great if they buy a poppy. That helps us to do the work, and it's still needed as much as it was 85 years ago.
It's not the first time I have felt moved by war stories. It's not the first time I have felt the need and the wish to do my tiny part in telling those stories and passing on their lesson. It was 1998, and I was working here at Vatican Radio's English programme, when my attendance at a wreath-laying ceremony in Anzio's Commonwealth War Cemetery left a powerful impression on me. It all started one hot sunny day, in which I had set out to go to the beach, but stopped off to gather material for a programme. I did much more than that. The men I met that day left a dent in my soul. I have never forgotten them or their stories, and I will always be grateful for having had the privilege to receive the memories of some of the protagonists of World War II. The memories that fill out the gaps left in history books, the gaps between battles, victories, dates, and historic speeches, and made me feel, in my stomach, how important it is not to forget.
Now, my name is Harry Schindler. I'm the representative in Italy of the Italy Star Association. The Italy Star Association made up of all the veterans of those who served in Italy, not only Anzio, but all parts of Italy.
Harry told me that he himself landed on day two. That was 2 days after the initial landing, on 24th of January, 1944.
And by that time, of course, the Germans had come down to welcome the troops, as they say.
Zu verlangen, dass ein unmöglicher Zustand auf dem Weg von friedlichen Revisionen bereinigt wird.
I'm sometimes asked to go to schools to talk about it, and the point I make is this. You have to ask yourself why our people were over here. What were they doing at Anzio? This is the thing. Why did people die at Anzio? Now, if you ask yourself that, then the picture becomes a bit clear, because obviously we never came to Italy to conquer Italy and occupy Italy as some colony. And this is very, very important for the future generations, that they understand that the reason why British troops landed at Anzio, or landed anywhere in Europe, it was because Europe was returning, as Churchill said, to the Dark Ages. And had Britain not, in fact, taken the action it did, we would at this time not be talking to a radio. Europe would have been one vast slave camp, said Churchill, and he was right. So we came over to liberate, and we really did liberate Europe. And we liberated Rome, and we liberated Italy.
We will never parley. We will never negotiate with Hitler or any of his gang. We shall fight him by land. We shall fight him by sea. We shall fight him in the air until, with God's help, we have rid the earth of his shadow and liberated its peoples from his yoke.
For a while we must part, but remember me, sweetheart, till the lights of London shine again.
Before and after the solemn and moving wreath-laying ceremony, I wandered amongst the people, stopping to have a word with them about being here, what it means today, and what it meant 54 years ago.
My regiment was the Rifle Brigade, but there was 100 of us sent from England to reinforce our battalion in Italy. And when we arrived at Naples, they cut the 100 of us into two halves, and half went to the regiment of the Ox and Bucks, and I went with my half to the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry. So we came to Anzio, and on the night of April the 10th, 11th of April, I was blown up by a mine. And I've had 9 operations on my back. I'm a very lucky man not to be paralysed.
How old were you on that day?
I volunteered, and I put my age up, 1.5 years.
Why was it so important?
Because in England, when the Germans were bombing London, we had 2 houses that we lived in, both bombed. And I said to my parents, I'm going to go and pay Adolf Hitler back. I'm going to kill him. So I volunteered. Of course, the office said, you are too young. So I went away, told a lie, wrote a letter. My father signed it, and I came back. And I made out that I was 18 and not 16 and a half.
Have you ever regretted that?
Oh, no.
My name is Ken Folkes. I think the main aspect of all this and the main content of it is to remember that we ourselves are the lucky ones. And we must not forget those who are no longer with us. And for me, I view and look at these people, and though I don't know any of them that are in these graves, they're still part of the they are still part of the eventual victory.
So it's about remembering and forgiving.
Remembering, and also to make sure that the authorities never let this sort of thing happen again. And for goodness sake, let the young people try and remember that they have got the freedom that these fellows here gave their lives for, and that freedom should be well taken care of. That's what I think. You know, when you look round at it, and most of these lads in here were in the age group of 21, 22 and 23, maybe some a little bit older. But I think to myself, now that I have a son who is 45, I hope that I might be able to pass down the importance of what these fellas put their lives down for.
Why is it so important to remember?
Well, so we should. Everyone should.
Everyone.
So don't try and stop it happening again.
So you actually got the responsibility to make people who weren't there understand what happened?
Yes, of course. We had to. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
What is it all about? Is it a lesson?
Yes.
Yeah.
What lesson is it?
Well, that war is futile. It is futile, isn't it? Futile. Unnecessary.
Good night, children, everywhere. Your mummy thinks of you tonight.
As I moved from one man to the next, each with a story on his face, in his eyes, in his wounds and in his badges, the lush, green, peaceful cemetery took on a different look. The bright sunshine that had made me want to go to the beach in the first place suddenly felt cruel and forgetful. As I looked at their faces, touched by time and suffering, and tried to see them as they were at 20, young, strong, and ruddy as they were when they first came here, with their mates, who never made it home.
She's with you night and day. Good night, children, everywhere.
Do you remember the fear? Or do you remember... What is the feeling you remember from the war?
Well, somehow, it seemed to be something that you had to do. If you were given orders to take ammunition and that, you just took it, and that was all. I mean, the bombardments and things like that. We were in one location where the guns were in the next field, and the first night that we were with them, there was no sleep at all, but the second night you just slept quite natural.
Did you realise the importance of what you were doing at the time?
Yes, I certainly did, yes, because with the concentration camps and the atrocities that were being committed, it seemed to be our duty to cut this kind of thing out, really.
I mean, you know, we all wear uniforms with battle honours written on them. If you look on the thing in the middle of my badge, there's battle honours on it.
One of the men attending the ceremony was Brigadier John Anderson, an officer of the 6th Queen Elizabeth's Own Gurkha Rifles, and then defence attaché at the British Embassy in Rome.
I didn't earn those battle honours. I never fought in those battles. I didn't create the reputation of my regiment, which is a pretty fantastic reputation. They did. Those people did. I'm here because of what they did. You know, I'm proud of my regiment, not because I earned that right to be proud, but because they did. And they're just the ordinary people. They weren't people who were something special or fantastically brave. They were the ordinary people of everyday life, you know, Mr. Jones, Mr. Smith, people who were sometimes rude about or sometimes uncaring about, and they were the guys who went out there and got killed.
When the lights go on again, all over the world, and the ships will sail again, all over.
And now Father Jim Brand, spiritual director of the Pontifical Baylor College, shares some of his own memories of Remembrance Day and reflects on the fact that love doesn't cease with death.
Last week, as we're in the month of the Holy Souls in November, I thought I'd have a few more thoughts with you. In our parish, north of London, we had two war widows. We made a great fuss of them around November the 11th, Armistice Day, Remembrance Sunday. We'd give them nice special places in church. We'd have a grass carpet in front of the altar, and people would bring up little crosses and red poppies that they could place there as a shrine. And then we'd have our Mass, which finished just before 11 o'clock. And then in the church we turn on the radio to join the nation at the cenotaph in Whitehall. So we'd be with the whole nation for 2 minutes silence. And then we'd hear the last post and reveille. And then we'd have a little reception for these two war widows. One, father was killed before his daughter was ever born. So his widowed wife had to bring up in a brilliant way this daughter who became a wonderful, wonderful lady. And the other, when I took her communion in her home, she still had the picture of her husband just before he was killed in the Second World War. That's devotion, where love doesn't cease with death, but continues. I was once giving a series of talks during Lent, and for the last of the talks, we all thought we'd bring some special, precious object that meant a lot to us. Some brought a poem, some brought marble or something, a rock they'd found on the beach, something that spoke to them. And there was an old lady there, very crippled, whose son is a very fine priest in my diocese. And she was always the life and soul of the group. She brought a photograph of her husband, again, who was in the RAF and who was killed in 1940, before his son was ever born. And she passed around this photograph of her husband in uniform. And she still loved him then, perhaps even more than when he was alive. And I found that the most wonderful example of someone being inspired by somebody who's now dead. Somebody who's still part of her life because she believes her husband is with the Lord. And if the Lord is with her, so is her husband. This devotion to people who've died, this gratitude, I find very moving. I think there are two things that stop us getting to heaven. The first is, if I think heaven is going to be all white or monochrome, if I'm a snob, I'll take one look into heaven and say, oh God, they're all there. Oh, pinks, blues, blacks, yellows. Oh, I'd rather go elsewhere. And all hell is one's wishes come true. Hell is a little room with a table set for one. Infinite loneliness, infinite isolation, infinite boredom, because I don't want to be loved by God or anyone else. So let's hope that in this life we get used to multicultural, multi-ethnic. All the religions are going to be in heaven because God loves all, remember. He doesn't just love Catholics, thank goodness. I'd hate it if there were any Catholics in heaven. Oh, how boring. Some of my best friends aren't Catholics. Really holy people. All the languages, all the liturgies, all the colours. Heaven will be Catholic, which means a universalist, because the Lord died for all. So in this life, let's make sure that we get used to being part of a world that has this wonderful variety. Because if we don't like it here, we won't like heaven, and we'll ask to go elsewhere. My old mother died aged 96, 3 years ago. She used to live with me for a while. I looked after her, and then she needed to go to a home because she needed a bit more care than I was able to give. And she used to sit in the window looking out at the garden in the dining room. And her best friend was 99. They both liked rice pudding, but they didn't really like the rice pudding the home produced. And my mother once said to her friend, "Doris, Doris, do you think they'll have rice pudding at your next port of call?" Doris said, "Oh, I hope so." And mother said, "Well, if it isn't any good, let me know and I'll ask to go somewhere else." Well, I don't know about the rice pudding, but if I don't like different colours, different cultures, different languages, different nations, I'll ask to go somewhere else. So that is the first thing that stops us going to heaven. The second thing is, if I'm too proud to receive a free gift. If somebody says, "I've always paid my way, never been beholden to anyone, so I'm going to turn up in heaven with all my prayers, my indulgences, my good works," and I'll say to the Lord, "Well, if not dress circle, maybe upper circle for me to watch the beatific vision." The Lord will say, "You can only come here if you're humble enough to accept a free gift, because we're all unprofitable servants. You can only come in your nothingness." I think those are the two prides that stop us getting to heaven. If I think I'm better than anyone else, and if I think I'm too proud to receive. And if we choose to go somewhere else, well, of course, if we go somewhere else, you pay through the nose, of course. If we choose to go somewhere else, the Lord is going to suffer an eternal heartache. There'll be one absolutely unique gift missing from heaven, because we've been created to be a gift for him. He's looking forward to our being in heaven infinitely more than we could be looking forward to it, because we've been created to give him joy, for him to enjoy our company. "I've gone to prepare you a place," he says, "so that where I am, you may be too." So let's learn from the fact that the Lord loves all and invites me to learn to love all. And let's, like him, have the humility to turn up at his Father's throne in his nothingness. Amen.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.